milk to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Y. I'm Hardy Y. Join me now, won't you, as we give thanks together, but separately, alone, as we give thanks for being alone, as we say thank you for the gift of solitude, as well as fellowship. Happy Thanksgiving. I am alone.
What a day to be alive. Hope tonight is like that.
Like what?
A day to be alive.
Well, tonight is part of today.
Some is part of tomorrow.
Anyway, it's good to be alive.
It is, and I hope we are.
We are what?
Alive.
Of course we're alive.
It sure seems like it, but I've never been dead, so it could have happened and I might not have noticed it.
You have an interesting perspective on things. I'm pretty sure I'm alive.
I am too, Captain. You're alive and not at all a fictional character in a story.
I might be that too one day, when my exploits are recorded for posterity.
Oh, a book recording your exploits for posterity. Don't buy one between now and Christmas, because that's a fantastic gift idea.
I was hoping some famous author would write about me.
Let's just see what happens. I sent a picture of my pet to a famous author, and they returned a wonderful book describing a fun adventure my pet had without me.
Oh, Cookie.
Yes, Cookie the Parrot. It was called Cookie's Fun Adventure. He was in a busy city, and then he was on a bus, and I don't even know what that is.
Sounds like a fabulous book. I'm sure it'll get one of those gold seals on it indicating a book award.
It deserves one. It's so creative.
Anyway, it's a glorious day. And also, happy Thanksgiving to you.
Happy Thanksgiving, Captain. May I ask what that is?
What is?
Thanksgiving.
Oh, it's a New World holiday.
Ah, so there's New World and Old World holidays. Like New World and Old World monkeys.
How's that?
You have your Old World monkeys, like a mandrill, and the New World monkeys, like the howler monkey. So Thanksgiving is a holiday howler monkey.
No, it's a holiday, a feast day.
Ah, like the feast day of St. Moses the Black.
St. who?
Moses the Black, my reverse patron saint.
Reverse patron saint?
Yes, he was a thief and a murderer, and took refuge in a monastery where he became pious and good. I'm just like that, but in reverse.
Well, you're the opposite of something.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, it's a holiday where you get together with friends or family and eat and give thanks for your blessings.
Sounds wonderful. Will we be celebrating aboard ship?
Well, I don't see how. We would need a cornucopia of foods and a table and ceramic small turkeys with holes in their sides to stick our rolled-up napkins in.
Yes, it might be hard getting enough people around the table since the ship is empty.
There's that. I still have you, sailor.
True. Though I am a mere figment of your imagination.
Don't remind me.
Seems strange that with all the dead sailors on the ship, you couldn't hallucinate a better companion than I.
Oh, don't put yourself down, figment of my imagination. You're a fine companion. Baffling at times, but better than being alone.
But you are alone.
Don't remind me.
Why? It's not such a bad thing. You're safe for the moment. The weather is nice.
The weather is nice.
The weather is very nice.
That's no small thing.
It isn't. And you have your thoughts, which I think are grand, for they created me.
Thank you, imaginary sailor, based on a real sailor in my past who now lies dead beneath my feet.
My pleasure. Much to be thankful for. No disagreeable family to argue with. Make you feel small.
Indeed. You can pick your friends.
But you can't pick your scurvy scabs. Captain's orders.
Yes.
Well, here's to the blessing of partial solitude.
May you find in your solitude the ghost ship of your imagination.
Hear, hear.
I am alone, and you are alone.
Lou, make a toast. A toast? Oh, okay. I don't usually make toasts, but since it's Thanksgiving and all, I've been asked to make one, and I will raise my glass and offer up some words. I say thank you a lot, but I mean it every time. When I say it, what I'm saying is, I acknowledge that you have made a choice to help me or show me kindness. And that you have given me something. You have contributed to the joy or peace in my life, and I am humbly recognizing that gift, and I'm letting you know I value it and understand its worth. Thank you, friends, for the love you have shown me. Thanks for the patience that you have demonstrated around me, even when I'm at my most frustrating. Thank you for thinking of me when I have felt abandoned or forgotten. Thank you for sharing what you have so we can both be safe or fed or well. Most of all, I want to thank one very special person tonight that I often forget or ignore. The person I am the hardest on. The person a lot of people assume I don't like. And that is me, Lou. Thank you, Lou, for you. At the end of the day, when I shut my eyes, I am me. And my whole world is me. And it seems that it's wise to make friends with that person and be as kind and patient as I could with any familiar friend or companion. So here's to me, Lou Register, friend and human being, and the vessel for all its faults, which I am thankful to be in on this weird adventure. Cheers. Hear, hear. It's weird being alone on Thanksgiving. But it's not tragic. To be honest, everyone out of the house is kind of nice. Especially Butchie's dog Spiny, who I love, but who is the devil. So I don't know if anyone else is listening, but here's to you. And here's to the blessing of solitude.
I am alone. You are alone. We are alone together. But we're not lonely.
Meals on wheels. Meals on wheels, Mr. Roberts. Don't get up. I'll show myself in. I'm kidding. I know you can't get up. I brought you Salisbury steak, your favorite. It's already mostly chewed up, so it's an easy eat. I know it's not typical Thanksgiving food, turkey, stuffing, and lasagna and all, but it's something you're thankful for. You know, they debate all the time what the food at the apocryphal first Thanksgiving was. You'll hear things like, there wasn't really turkey and all, they served eel. Baloney. The indigenous people had turkeys and buffalo and corn. Eel? You know who eats eels? The English. They scoop them out of muddy rivers, the squirming, animated intestines that are these loathsome creatures, these slimy and nightmarish things that dwell in the dark places underneath Coleridge's Mariner's Ghost Ship. And they cut them up, and they put them in jelly, and they serve them to other Englishmen. I say the first Thanksgiving, a fictional and preposterous event, would have had a menu of something very like Salisbury steak, made from buffalo, and the wild onions that grow in the valleys of the mountain range that the original people called Pittsburgh. Anyway, I'll get out of your hair, Mr. Roberts, and let you eat your hamburger in peace. I know that on Thanksgiving, it's a big deal to get together with people, but I remember you once told me, back when you could talk, that there was no more peaceful, harmonious, festive meal than when you dined alone surrounded by a chaotic world of fire and lions. Till next year.
I am alone. You are alone. We are alone together, but we are not lonely because we have ourselves. And if we don't have ourselves, we can never be together anyway. I'm alone right now, and maybe you are too.
When I think of Thanksgiving, I think of parades. And when I think of parades, I think of the one right in front of me because it's hard not to. Already the streets are filled with people who expect to see something pretty spectacular, given the streets are blocked off and there's all these people. And they will not be disappointed as groups of other people are walking by and doing things, often in unison. Our next float is called Last Year at Marienbad, and we see a French chateau with a man and woman on the balcony overlooking a formal French garden. Over 5,000 yards of fabric and 6 tons of tissue paper have come together to create a tangible reminder that you can never return to the past,
which is but a cloud of dreamlike memories and alien feelings. Next up, the A&P of your childhood. This papier-mâché recreation of a 60s grocery store has all the familiar sights and sounds of the original neighborhood market. I have spilled my heart out into the ordinary architecture of my quaint suburban existence, poured myself onto the linoleum floors of a cold place that seemed and seems like a magical museum of sensory pleasure. Clean up on aisle four. Here's the Marching Murmuration Band. As one of the musicians turns or slows, so do the immediately adjacent musicians. And with all of them taking turns at being the drum major leader, the group of horn players and drummers swirls and flows in a constant mutating pattern. And I think they're playing Tusk by Fleetwood Mac. I'm alone, you are alone, we're alone together, we're not lonely, but we're also not together. Imagine how many of us are alone at the same time. Hundreds, thousands, millions. That's too many. I'm glad it's just a dinner of one tonight. Silence is golden. Noise is golden. Hearing is jewelry making. Speaking is silversmithing. If you can dance, you're doing something akin to glass blowing. I have sat perfectly still and made throne rooms, palaces. I sat looking at my hands and noticed ceramic rococo animals forming between my fingers, craning their necks when I point. What I'm saying is, I am experiencing my world into being. Oh, there is such beauty in solitude, and there is truth in solitude to some degree. We know that because when we pay money to go to some spiritual center, they always say things like, well, you just need to go sit by yourself. You go, wow, that would have saved me a trip. The answer is not usually somebody standing in front of you giving you answers. The answer is usually go inside of your own mind. Now, when I first tried doing that, I was very frightened because my own mind is like some kind of abandoned southern amusement park that had a bad theme to begin with. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, let's base it on Hair Bear Bunch or something. And people will come and want to ride these fun rides, and then they don't. And then it becomes just a crumbling mass of metal and fun houses that aren't fun anymore because they've been taken over by nature. There are things now, creeping things, living in the house of mirrors. All the mirrors are shattered, and there's vines growing through the plaster. Ooh, that's my brain. But I have become used to it, and now I'm doing some renovation. I even know how to drive to the amusement park improvement store, they don't call it the home improvement store, and buy all the supplies I need to get those rides up and running again. Because my internal world is actually a wonderful place. And I know that it is largely shaped by the outside world. I didn't invent all these images that are in there. But I went out in the world and I grabbed some and I brought them back home. So now my imagination contains only the elements of the reality that I live in. So the houses in my brain look like houses that you've seen, probably. But there's other things that I can create. Oh, being alone is not so bad. They say, oh, you come in the world alone, you go out alone. But the thing is, when I came in the world alone, I really didn't understand what was happening. I have no memory of it. And I, honest to gosh, because of no frame of reference, I don't know that I realized I was alone. Maybe I thought I was the whole universe. And by being born, I realized, oh my gosh, there's not just me. Now I have to deal with other people. And the first people that you have contact with, literally, are family. Here I come, right out of my family, into more family. Then there's a bunch waiting in another room. And then you have to be introduced to them. And then they seem, for many years, quite normal to you, until you have something to compare them with. Oh, how was I born into this particular unit, you say? By some fate? I mean, it's not, maybe you weren't just a free-floating spirit. Maybe you're just constructed of all these things, these memories that exist when you get there. Oh, are you alone on Thanksgiving? I am, Hardy, and I'm lonely. Don't be lonely. First of all, you have me. I will never contradict you or challenge you in any way. You can always turn my voice off. You can walk away. You can actually go to the bathroom while I'm speaking. Come back. I will still be speaking. And I will not in any way be insulted by the fact that you wandered off while I was talking to you. Well, if you try to do that in front of Aunt Fritzy, Aunt Fritzy is going to be like, Nancy, you have the worst manners. And you'll go, don't start with me. I've had a bad day. You don't know what it's like to be me. And then she'll go, you don't know what it's like to be me. Say, you don't know what it's like to be me. You don't know what it's like to be me. You don't know, but you know what it's like to be you. So if you're all alone, you don't have to have that argument. Well, sometimes I have it with myself anyway. Oh, Hardy, you don't know what it's like to be me. And Hardy says, no, that's just foolish. Of course I do. You're creating two yous. One of you is based on, I think, what largely other people, their opinions of you. Now, they're going to have agendas. Oh, people have agendas. They have big, large agendas on the kind of paper, the oversized paper they call office paper or legal paper. I don't know if you've ever tried doing anything legal with something smaller than, I don't know, what is it, 17 inches long or something. But they'll say, no, this is not the legal paper. Also, there can't be lines on it. What? But the legal pad has lines on it. The judge starts yelling at me. I don't even think you're a lawyer. I go, sir, I am not a lawyer. First of all, this is happening in the court of my imagination, where I am one of the best lawyers. It's a hard word to say if you want to pronounce all the letters. We skip some. But I sit there with my briefcase open. Who am I defending? I'm defending this. I know that it's great to be with people, and it's so joyful to have fellowship, but we can't always be with others. And sometimes we feel very alone, and that's no reason to feel sad necessarily. You know, there's nothing to say that everyone who is not in your company is really, they could be unworthy of it for some reason. Don't, if you find yourself alone, sometimes it's a blessing to be unnoticed, to be like Don Quixote's helmet. So Don Quixote had a magic helmet, and coincidentally, it was shaped like a shaving basin. Therefore, no one would want to steal his magic helmet. If your magic helmet looks like a shaving basin, what's a shaving basin? It's a bowl with a bite out of it. It looks like an ordinary bowl that you might pee in. And then the Cookie Monster is taking a, oh, I made it a C. And he made it a letter C by taking a crescent, which is what he causes by his biting. Have you ever noticed that? He's always taking a bite out of something. And you say, well, suddenly it looks like the logo of the state of South Carolina. That's because the Cookie Monster does that. He takes a bite out of the moon. You ever seen, looked up the moon? You go, what's up with the moon? It looks like it's not a full disk. You say, no, 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 that's done with shadows. There's not a bite out of the moon. Because you'll see, it'll come back and go, I thought it was like breathing. And the moon in my imagination does, and the moon in many people's imagination does, because you'll notice that a lot of times they'll depict a crescent moon like that, and that has a nose on it or something, like it's in profile. It's like, oh, look, I'm a crescent moon doing, if it's a Studio 54, it's snorting a spoon. But there could be a child sitting on the tip of the crescent moon fishing, or anything like that, or laundry hanging out there, which you're not allowed because there are covenants in this solar system. And what is, you can't just let wet towels or laundry or stuff hang out on your crescent like that, the edge of your crescent, because it'll get a cluttered look. Right now, the solar system has a beautiful, neat look to it, a manicured look, I call it, depending on your perspective. You get up close to Venus and you go, ooh, it needs work. But if you pull back, the universe is all smooth. Real estate might be like that, too. Look at this house. I'm looking at this house too closely. Ah, like the song says, from a distance. If I just do my real estate shopping with a drone, that might be better. Or just the thing that shows you Google Earth or something. I don't need to look any closer. I'll take that house. Even though it seems to me it's like stretched out. Well, that's the camera does that. All right, I hope the real house isn't all stretched out like that. And then it is. Let's imagine that we've just landed in a ship on somewhere, some new world. We've escaped from our old country because we had a minor theological difference or something. We got in an argument at church. That's what it was. We were going to church. Everything was fine. And then they had this meeting about changing the carpeting.
in the sanctuary. And they were like, it has to be a certain color red. And you were like, this minutia is ridiculous. This is not, doesn't reflect our values. It's not why we're here. I don't care what color the carpet is in the cestern or whatever. It's not that. It's at the annex. Annex, whatever. Larynx. Narthex, that's what it is. It was the carpet and the narthex. So then we left, which is not part of the throat, which I used to think for a long time. So we left, we've gone to a new country. Now here's the thing. So we're escaping. We're essentially refugees on this boat. We're leaving because we couldn't take that old church. And why we couldn't just go to a new one in the same country, I guess we just wanted a fresh start leaving there then. And we travel to an unfamiliar place, you and I. We don't know what's there. We go, oh, no one's ever been here. Then we see there's plenty of people there already. We go, well, how's this going to work out? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Here's the thing. Let's pretend that there's no one's there, that we've landed on Gilligan's Island long before the Gilligan crew got there, long before the World War II soldier who was abandoned there, long before he was there. There's no one there. It's just us. And we say, let's celebrate our survival by making a festive feast here. And we start to scour the island. Not scour it literally with scrubbing it. It doesn't need scrubbing. Sand, you don't have to clean sand. So we start looking around for things. And the first obvious thing, you say, well, it's a tropical island or a desert island. If it's desert, all deserts have palm trees. So we know there's coconuts, coconut desert island. And we said, we can have, at the very least, we can have coconuts. And then I think we can split the coconut in half. You make yourself a bra like Ray Walston in South Pacific. I'll be stew pot.
Nothing like a day.
So after we get done recreating South Pacific, we get back to our feast making. Now, we don't want to, but there's no other animals on the island, so it won't even come up whether we should kill and butcher an animal. And we kind of, at one point, we look at each other and we cartoon morph into chicken legs or something, and we go, no, it's not worth it. We'll just gather nuts and little some of the sand has clumped together, and it looks like candied ginger, but it's sand. But we use our imaginations like children do. The children make mud pies, don't they? Children make a pie out of anything. What is that? What is a creative pie? I made a pie out of a duty. What kind of, is it dog duty? I think so. Okay, that's not really a pie. We were selling them to people on the side of the road like a lemonade stand. Oh, how many did you sell? We did very well. Thanks for asking. Run. If you've been selling people poopy and pies, run. I know that there's already a movie like that. What's it called? Sweeney Turd, right? Is that right? Oh, I'm so sorry. You say, you should have children. You don't usually make puns like that. I guess I'm angry at the world right now. A little bit. No, I'm not. I'm not really. Because I'm with you. Well, we're not together. I can imagine what it's like to be with you. I don't have to be. Sometimes I am sad when I'm alone and I pine. I pine. Badly, I pine. But then oftentimes I enjoy the solitude. I like being alone with my own thoughts. I can get them all organized. Sometimes I can get them really in such an order that I can see movies almost, but I feel them. Oh, if you haven't gone there, is this a meditation process? Yes, let me teach you how to do this. It takes some practice, but close your eyes and now think things. Now think things vividly. So it's just like, I want to think about a dog. So well, pick a breed you've seen. I'll think about a beagle dog. Beagle. Now you have to concentrate on things like make sure its ears are flappy. Start to notice things. You know when you were first learning to write a story or something when you were a child, they would draw you out. A good teacher would say, what you want to make a story about? Elephant. Okay, what's the elephant look like? It's big. And they want you to be more and more specific, to describe the elephant in more and more specific terms. It's gray. Its legs are round. And now you can get into things like, you know, how does it make you feel? Oh, it's sort of menacing because it's large, you know, but it seems gentle. Its eyes are very liquid and have great soul and depth to them. Look at them, the wrinkles around them. I can see their character, and you can go deeper like that. Their skin, now that I look at it, their skin looks like the wrinkliest skin on my body. Where's that? I don't know, maybe my hands, the palm of my hands. And so you get them to think about the thing they're describing poetically. And the more you think about it poetically and the greater detail you explore, the more it takes form in your mind. And the more you can see and experience that imaginary elephant. Because just saying elephant is insufficient. It will not conjure up the things you need. And once you are experienced at using words to create images in your mind, you'll be able to create them wordlessly, perhaps. To marry the feeling to the thing. So how does that make... And you'll have the smells. They come without summoning. The smells come to you when you say, I remember that old typewriter and how it smells, the ink of the old typewriter, the keys, the grease in the keys, that comes to you without having to fetch it. Oh, this place, this great palace that you have there, it's as empty or as full as you want it to be. And it doesn't always work right. I'm not going to tell you the human mind works perfectly and that they're not all subtly different. But it's like computers or anything. This is what it should do out of the box, but it won't. It's going to do something quirky and specific to you, which is wonderful. And that's the right way. Whichever model you got is the right model. Now, you might want to modify it or adjust it if it's causing you pain or discomfort there. You might want to get, I don't know, go and have it to have the viruses removed occasionally, if that can be done. Oh, what did you bring me?
I brought you a pie.
First of all, I'm going to ask you that main question. Is it edible food in the pie?
It's a type of fruit.
What kind of fruit is it? It's fruit that doesn't exist. What do you mean fruit that doesn't exist? It's a berry, but better than all the berries you've had. Oh, are you talking about the boysenberry? Maybe. That's a hybrid. Oh, the hybrid berries are the best. The things that you can make together, they might not even exist yet. You take the sweetness of the strawberry, you add it to the slightly sour tartness of the raspberry, and maybe mix in some the dark fruit experience of the blackberry. And you can mush them all together.
Why can't I just mush them all together?
Oh, that would be okay, too. Yeah, let's get away from the berry eugenics. We don't have to make one like that. We can just combine them where they are. We can just put our beautiful minds together. We don't have to live for some imaginary future. You and I can make our own history. You and I can make that world that we've read about in the past, the one we dream about in the future. We're in the present. It doesn't seem as exciting as sexy. It seems hard. It seems like a slog. It seems alternatingly boring and too exciting. Oh, it does. It does, my friends. But we are living that life. We are living that adventure. We are living some weird story. It is strange. It is scary. It is painful. It is joyous. It's all those things in different measure. And I don't even think actual measuring things are being used. I think whoever's making it is just throwing the things in willy-nilly. Maybe nobody's making it. Nobody and everybody. Oh, it is Thanksgiving, is it not?
Maybe not. Maybe I'm listening to this on a different day.
Oh, I'm not making it time-specific.
It is not what they call evergreen.
Evergreen. And that word is popping up a lot for media that is not specific to one time or anything. You can listen to it any time, and it will still be the same thing. It doesn't indicate, it doesn't speak to the times at all. Oh, containing none of the zeitgeist you are used to. Here is an evergreen broadcast. What happened before and after? Oh, it doesn't matter. It's suspended outside of time, apparently, like a reef. Like the one you get from the garage. Now, you couldn't put an ordinary wreath in there. It's not evergreen in that sense. It has to be still living. When things die, yes, they do wither away. So it does have to be a living thing. It has to be alive. And if it's alive, it's an age. And if it's an age, then it's married, it's wedded to a time. Oh, there's no escaping it. Nothing is outside of its time. Nothing lives outside of this world. We are swimming in it. We are soaking in it. Oh, you are a 70s fingernail. And you're in a dish of dishwashing liquid, which is not no specific brand, but I don't know that I object to the product because I've tried getting dishes clean with just water, and it's not easy. An ordinary soap, but that liquid concentrated soap, that works really well for dishes. I think it's okay. I don't make the leap where just because something doesn't damage your hands means you gotta go take a dive into it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, something might not be bad for you, but you don't want to immerse yourself in it. You, does that make any sense to you? Yeah, I think so. Right, exactly. Like, I don't know if, apple butter is bad for you, but you don't want to go into a mikveh full of apple butter. I would come out. How would I come out? You'd come out a different person, that's for sure, if at all. Oh, let me rise out of the gravy bowl. Let me jump off of the serving plate. Let me lay across your lap like a napkin. Let me stand in the center of the table like the centerpiece. What's it made of? It's made of wisps of wheat and baby's breath. It is made of pine cones and artificial apples. It is made of our hopes and our dreams and our memories and our images of what is bountiful. It is made of the foods of our ancestors, memorialized, made into symbols, made into icons. But notice those fruits. Where is the banana? If you're a hospitable person, there's a pineapple because the pineapple is the symbol of hospitality, ironically emblazoned on plantations, the symbols of man's cruelty to man. Who is welcome? The pineapple maybe is false hospitality. Come, I'm a pineapple, I am welcoming. Stick your naked nethers next to my top. Ow! Pineapple! You are no joke, death by my mouth. You are not. You look welcoming, but you are spiny. Spiny is my friend Butchie's dog, and I love all dogs. So, in theory, I love Spiny. But Spiny is what we call a menace. Spiny has no control, no self-control. And you say, well, it's a dog. I know, but some dogs do, right? Not all dogs obey every impulse they have. And Spiny does. Spiny is very much Butchie's dog. And Butchie will not discipline Spiny because Butchie's like, the dog doesn't know. Dog has free will or something. It's just the dog. It's being dog. It's like doing dog nature. So if it digs up anything, it's dug up relatives and things like that. Butchie just shrugs it off. But now Spiny isn't here. Butchie isn't here. Lou isn't here. You're not here. I'm by myself. I guess I don't even have to speak. But I don't mind speaking to myself. I have things to say to myself. Sometimes I'm angry with myself. Sometimes I'm happy with myself. Sometimes I'm amused. Sometimes I'm saddened, frustrated with who I am. But the thing that always I think about at the end of the day is, who are these two me's? How can I be mad at me? Is me a different person than I? And I know that I'm not the first person to think about this, but it drives me absolutely crazy. Who am I mad at? What am I mad at? You know, why am I mad? And why am I having this discussion when there should be a direct line between these parts of my brain? Why do they have to be mediated by words? Why do I have to use words to put things into some kind of form that the wordless part of me understands, the part that just does things, that has desires, that just acts on impulse? And what's this little thing, this little voice that's talking to that? Maybe that little voice is you, and the voiceless voice is really me, the one that grabs a cookie off a counter like Spiny. Spiny's alone with food, and Spiny says, that's my food. Spiny doesn't think, oh, they're going to get mad at me. Is this cookie really worth being screamed at by Lou? Man, but, you know, part of me doesn't think that. So I care and I don't care. But I notice that a lot of the parts that hurt, where I judge myself, I'm speaking the language of others. Now, I don't know how good that is. I don't know who has the most power in there from the outside world. Maybe it's somebody despicable. Maybe I've internalized some voice of somebody who doesn't deserve it. Maybe somebody has scolded me or wagged their finger on TV and I've mistaken that person for a god or some power or that part of me that should guide my behavior, that wagging finger, that anger, that rejection, that threat of rejection that guides all my internal dialogue. Where's that coming from? Who put that in there? Was I born with that? I'll tell you what I was born with. I was born with some kind of human goo all over me, some kind of byproduct of biology, covered with it, connected to it, gristly and nasty and dripping and sweaty. That's how I came in here, and not knowing anything of what y'all done. And then sometimes I like to have Thanksgiving that way and say, I give thanks. I don't know what this is. It's weird, this experience. Because the more I think about it, the more it just sort of evaporates in my fingers. When I'm absolutely sure of things, I will stare at them, and they will dissipate. They will disappear like a magic eye puzzle. And suddenly I don't see the ship anymore. I just see a bunch of jumbled shapes on the page of the funny papers. I think, where was I just now? Where's that ship gone to? Oh, that ship is still there, and you or I are on it because they've taken that ship and they have dry docked it and they've made it into a theme restaurant. Yar, let's go there and eat as much of this wonderful food as we can on this beautiful ship of our imagination. It's a ship of my imagination. I'm not going to lie to you. You're welcome on it, but I made the ship. You get your own. You can make your own. What's yours on? Is it on one of those pontoon boats, one of those party barges? Y'all folks like to take out on lakes. Let's rent a party barge. It looks like two big torpedoes with a patio on it, kind of a flimsy patio and an awning. And you ride around on the lake like that, drinking beer and saying, man, this is the life. This isn't it? This is. Isn't this the life? This is the life. Look at that lake. I'm looking at it. Look at that sky. I'm looking at it. Look at this. Look at it. Look at it. This is the life. This is the life. Look at those trees. This is the life. We could be fishing. I don't want to fish. This is the life. I like doing nothing. I like doing nothing too. This is the life. This is the life. We're living the life. I'm living the life. Who are you? I'm with you. I'm your friend. All right. I won't get in the way of you living the life. Me neither. I just want to point out that I am the one who rented the party barge. To you. I lift my drink. Oh, we're together on one of those barges. Or we're together on some historic ship. I don't know. A weird sea. Shit, what is it? It's orange. Is it because it's sunset? Or is it because it's made of tang? Are we on an ocean of tang? I want to dip my cup in and drink as much as possible. Don't do it. Don't do it. Tang, tang everywhere, but not a drop to drink. This tang has things in it. What? Eels? Well, I've eaten eel. That's no big deal. Ew! Can you imagine sailing on an ocean of tang with the eels there beneath you, sliming around there, just outside of your consciousness? And all the creepy things creeped, and then so do I, and then so do I, because I'm creepy, as Coleridge said. And he was. Coleridge is a creepy, creepy dude. I'm sure he was all right. He just had to read his poetry at inopportune times. Or read his friend's poetry. What's worse? You're at a party, and you go, everybody be quiet. Be quiet. I'm Coleridge. I'm now going to read some poems by my friend Wordsworth. So everybody listen up. This one is called The Leech Gatherer. You know, and then he'd do that at parties and stuff. And then he'd be like, I can get you drugs. So I guess he's an interesting person. And of course, like everyone back then, you know, he originally wanted to be clergy. Everybody. Isn't it that way now? Every time you see a stand-up comic, it's like, I bet originally they wanted to be clergy or a teacher or something, one of those professions where you're forced to listen to somebody ramble on about in some confessional issue that you laugh uncomfortably at, and which they, for the rest of their life, interpret as an ability to be funny, when really it's just a cringy. I don't want to be that for you. Oh, my gosh. If I'm going to be confessional, I wanted to help you. Necessarily. Not me. I know everything I did. I'm already... I don't have to speak it out loud. I've dreamt it. I've lay there with it, sighing as it plays in my head like a movie, like a high-def movie. You know, they shot a version of Lord of the Rings in a super, super high-def film. It's like, I don't know how many millimeters, 8 million. The film was as wide as a canyon. And so it registered every little bit of life, every detail. And the problem was that a lot of things on the Lord of the Rings set were props. So they were made up. This is not really an elfin mug. It's made of fiberglass. And see, all of a sudden, though, the camera saw that, and it looked like a shiny fiberglass mug. There was no longer that beautiful lack of resolution that allows you to experience something poetically. No, it was just the stark facts, and the facts often contradict with the feeling. And so it's wonderful to have the imperfect vision. It's wonderful when those things play on your internal movie theater in a way that obfuscates some of the detail. Because too much detail will not help. If you lose someone and you're looking for them and they're lost, and someone says, well, we found somebody, and they begin to describe their chemical makeup, and you go, I don't know. I don't know. What were they? Do they have pretty soulful eyes? Because that's what my elephant looked like. So if you just describe something internally that's, it could be specific and true, but I won't know. Because what I see are the wet, beautiful, soulful eyes of my elephant friend, whose face is like the palm of my hand. Ooh, that's what I'm looking for. Oh, have we found one another friend? I think we're friends. I don't want to be... It's weird to be self-conscious like that, and I know you should be cool when you're sort of with somebody and you're hanging out and everything, and... But sometimes they make you feel extra special more than other folks, and you just want to say, I'm really glad we're friends. I enjoy your company so much. I hope it's not just because you indulge me rambling on like that, and you're secretly, you're just kind of passively sitting there thinking, this jerk. I hope that it's reciprocal, you know. I hope that we both enjoy each other's company, because I know I'm enjoying yours. I'm not saying anything. You don't have to. Because, listen, think about this. I don't know who's listening to me right now. And there's no real way of me checking it in, you know. But I know this. If you're still listening to me, I've been speaking now for 40-some minutes. If you're still listening, then there's some sort of interest there. Even if you're somebody assigned to my case to investigate me. So let's see what's up with this fella, whether he needs to... We'll keep an eye on him. We need a file on it. Maybe he's promoting some dangerous idea. Oh, I am. I hope they never figure it out. I count on the lack of patience, the small attention span of my enemies. Because that way I can say things and disguise them not with, you know, some things are, okay, let's say you have a code and you want to put it on the back of a cereal box, but you want the children to see it. So what you do is you write the code and say black ink, and then you obfuscate it with red ink so that to see the code, you need the red to disappear. So you need to put on red glasses. The red glasses cancel out the red obfuscating text, and you can see the secret message. The red glasses are patience. The red glasses are a long attention span. The red glasses are the ability to notice, to take time to connect with other human beings, to look carefully at things that have been set up that are obviously symbolic or some sort of art or message, to take time to interpret it, to look at it, to think about it, to feel. And when you do, you'll find a hidden message. And the hidden message by itself is enlightening, and also the experience of uncovering something, of finding meaning in chaos, is its own reward. Meals don't last very long. The beautiful food is set out. It takes hours to prepare sometimes. Sometimes days. If you count the growing, months. And then the feast is set out before you. And then there's that moment. If you're going to feel thankful, you think, this is the moment I must do it. That tiny little window between preparation and consumption, when the thing is laid out, it's ready. That's when it's at its peak. It's perfect. And now you consume it to take its energy, to take the joy of having a need fulfilled. And then it's gone. Then it's gone. And then you sit there and you begin your career as a poop factory. But the feast that's laid out is already gone. Are you still thankful? Yes, I'm still thankful. This contentment. I am sated. I feel like all of my desires have been met. And then that's symbolic. Because once you eat and once you're full, you get a little taste of what it's like to be satisfied, to have your needs met, to be okay in the world. When your only desire was to be fed, when you were absolutely new, and when the screams of misery and agony are easily dismissed by something that I imagine was like sweetened condensed milk, which I've been using to make pumpkin pie. It's amazing. Man, I gotta tell you, I just keep dipping my finger in this sweetened condensed milk and going, well, that's the dessert right there. I don't have to do anything with it. I've been making all sorts of stuff with it. If you boil it in the can, you get leche yum yum. I forget what it's called. It's really yummy. You caramelize it right in the can. But it's amazing stuff. And then afterwards, I can feel completely satisfied. But then that will disappear, and the hunger will return. And so how do we capture that feeling? And should we capture it? What do we do with it? We share it. Oh, my friend, if I can share with you that feeling of having everything you need. But you know what else is a good feeling? Needing. Oh, it's a fine feeling, too. It sets you upon adventures. I need to get this ring back to that deep pit. And it's not going to be easy. But I'm going to have experiences, and during those experiences, as we go on our quest together, you and I, this matter of life and death, my friend, this journey through the woods where we will experience all sorts of trees and pine. We'll be together. And it will be sprinkled with these feelings of absolute completion and satisfaction as we move towards the ultimate one of depositing that ring right back where it came from. And yes, we're going to have to return it. We may hold on to it for years, but at some point, we're going to have to return this old ring back to the fire where it came from. And that's all right. Many have done it. We're going to do it. But right now, we're in the middle of this quest. Right now, we're wading through ponds of weird, spooky ghosts looking up at us like they're sea cucumbers. I don't know. Sea cucumbers with little faces on them. Help me! Oh, that's terrifying. I like the reason that Thanksgiving is also associated with horror is because it's a harvest time. It's a time of death. The wheat has to die. And I guess back in the day when people had imaginations, they'd imagine that the person with the big scythe out there in the field was death itself. And that when it was reaping this wheat, the wheat was going, like that, because that was the end of the wheat. And so people were like that too. People were getting, they thought that death is just like that. It's coming to harvest me. But that's as far as you think. You don't think it's going to harvest me, and then I'm going to be bread or a cracker, a cap'n. I could be a cap'n wafer. That some child is enjoying. You go to your favorite old-timey restaurant, and they go, I bet you're hungry. You want a basket of crackers? Yeah, I love that. And then you fill up on Cap'n Wapers, and you can't eat your shrimp. But that's all right. I'll be that future cap. I won't be here to see you enjoying me as bread. But someday, I won't be Hardy White. I'll be Hardy White bread, and you'll be eating me, consuming me. That means you'll be listening to this show long after I'm gone. What is the shelf life of this show? How long will it last? Can I keep it in my bunker? Because I've got one of those secure bunkers in case there's an attack. Will it last as long as a can of Vienna sausage? Will it last as long as this Japanese curry condensed? Have you had this? Oh, I got a great recipe for you. Go out to your Asian market and get Japanese curry. It doesn't have to be, it's not refrigerated. It's an unrefrigerated section. It's these condensed block, sort of big, like a bouillon cube thing. And it's katsu curry, which is a Japanese curry dish. And they usually make a cutlet with to have with it. But what it is this yummy, thick gravy sauce. So you put carrots and potatoes and onions in a pot with water. And then when it's boiling and you've cooked all the vegetables, you take one of these Japanese, and there's different brands, I'm not going to mention them, curry things, break it up in there and stir it, and you've got this thick, delicious, savory Japanese curry. And if you keep these little packets around, I don't know how long they last, I think maybe a couple of years or something, you could take those into the bunker. Here's the thing, though. My archive shows last longer than that. I mean, they last longer than that. I can't think of a food that lasts that long. They found cheese in the tombs of the pharaohs. It was not edible. But I know I last as long as some canned goods. I know I do. Because you know what never goes out of fashion style? And that is one person's voice saying, I know what it's like to be alive, and I understand your struggle. And I want to share some things with you that I think you might enjoy. I know that life is a struggle, and I know it's not always easy. So here's some things that might help you that I felt come in handy. One is lubricant, not literally, but something that makes it smoother. So if you have a lock, put some powdered graphite in it. Not the spray lube, because, no, that's seriously, don't put the spray lube in locks. It gets sticky, and it'll make your pin stick. What you want to do to lubricate a sticking lock is graphite. So there are different things that make different jobs easier, that make different tasks easier, that make enduring things easier. So humor isn't always the greatest thing. Humor doesn't always make all situations better, but it does some. And so I use a little bit of humor, but I also use a little bit of, not 409, what's it called? 4X. 40X, X40O spray lubricant as well. Now, it isn't funny, right? But it gets the job done. There's different ways to get through things. We'll get through these things. Sometimes you just gotta be creative. Mix and match. Have a little humor. Have a little sentiment. Have a little sarcasm. Have a little dark, a little light. Gotta mix it all up. See what works. See what elevates. Oh, yes. It's like those escape room things that people do with their friends. Gotta put your brains together. But sometimes you gotta put your own brain together and escape. Or sometimes you have to realize that the room itself is beautiful. That you can be alone in a small cell with just one tiny window, like the squint in the cell of a of one of those, I forget what they're called, one of those monks that doesn't ever go out or see anybody. They're just in the cell, and they've got a little window, and they can look into services, and they look at other people, and they go back to their aesthetic, solitary life. And that's good to do sometimes. It's good to just look out in the world and then go back into that room and see the entire universe. Oh, everything that ever was, all there in your tiny room, like you're a anchorite. Is that it? Anchorite. It came to me. Yes. There's ones that monks used to do crazy things. There's anchorites. There's dendrites. Those are people that used to go and sit on the top of trees like that. There's ones that used to go and sit on top of poles, just sit there for as long as possible. Oh, there's different ways. It's, a lot of times extreme spirituality seems exactly like David Blaine, or whatever his name is, the magician. But it isn't magic. You don't need to do those things. You don't need to sit at the top of a tree. You don't need to hold your pee for days on end in a glass box in New York or something like that. I don't think that's how you get there. How you get there is just stumbling by, just getting through in a sloppy, day-to-day, wonderful, messy fashion, talking to yourself because you and you are not coordinated. You and you are on different pages. You are that two-headed dinosaur on Dragon Tales. So you're Zach and Wheezy arguing with yourself all the time. I don't know as many. I'm worried now a lot of you aren't children. And say, oh, I don't know that show, Hardy. It's okay. I mean, when I said two-headed dragon arguing with itself, that should be enough. Yes, I know that from my science fiction club. Yeah, I'm sure it appears in a lot of different stories. It's a great metaphor. So, I won't be your... Come to the two-headed dragon club. Which sort of sounds like a restaurant. I'd go there. I love it. We go to the Two-Headed Dragon for their drink specials. I don't even drink very much, but so I go there. I'll just order the drink for the stuff that's in it. There's like a little umbrella and fruit, and I'll just pour the rest out because I don't want to feel sick. Oh, you know what makes me not feel sick? Being with you, friends. Well, sometimes I'll still feel, if I'm already sick and I'm with you, I'll feel still sick. But sometimes I feel a little better, and sometimes I feel like being with you keeps me from being sick, and I know it does in some ways. It keeps me from losing my mind, I believe. And I know if I did lose my mind, though, you'd help me go find it. We'd put up signs. And my mind would be easy to find, I think, because it's so obvious. Oh, my friends, if you are listening to this on the actual holiday of Thanksgiving, which is when I think it originally aired in 1923. What year was this on? No, it was in the time. It might have been in the 2000s or 2100s. Oh gosh, I don't remember. I jump around so much through time. Oh, my friends, I want to sing you a hymn of love and a hymn of thanksgiving. We're all together today, even though we are far apart. I'm not your disagreeable step-granddad who yells at you and feels such hate, 'cause there's hate in his heart for himself and his own parents. Now he's taking it out on you. We're not even blood, it doesn't matter. We're all dining on the same pudding put before us by a strange host from another dimension. That's what it's like. And I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't know what spoon to use, but I know you're in the same boat, and I love our boat, and I'm glad it's a dry dock theme restaurant. Oh, my friends, thank you for listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City and Rockland County, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. You are my friend, and I am glad of it, and I will see you again next week.
want right now that stands in need of a spiritual blessing right now. Stands in need of a financial blessing. They got a bill needs to be paid. I want everyone right now, just come and lay your hands on the radio, because I'm going to make contact with my Savior. I'm going to make contact with my bread maker. I'm going to make contact with my blesser. I want you right now to bring the bills and lay them on the radio. If you got a son or a daughter way in jail, in prison, you can't break them. Just bring knowledge of them.
Do what right now.
I say just bring knowledge of them.
Yes, sir.
And lay your hands on the radio.
It's time once again for the Sinner's Crossroads Gospel Broadcast here on WFMU. Stay tuned.